Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, sponsored by WebSpy. Today I'm going to explain all about the new Martin Bailey Photography Podcast companion app, now available in the iTunes App Store. Before we jump into that, I'd like to say a big thank you to our sponsors, WebSpy, the Internet Monitoring, Analysis and Reporting Specialist. And as usual, I'd like to ask you to tweet the message thanks to @WebSpy for sponsoring the @MartinBaileyPhotography Podcast on Twitter to show your support. To find out more about WebSpy and their products, go to webspy.com/MBP and use the discount code MBPWSY for a 10% discount on anything that you buy. So last week we launched the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast companion app, and it's now available to buy in the iTunes App Store. And today I'm going to explain a little about what you will find in the app and how we intend to develop it, depending on initial sales. I would like to say a huge thank you to Marc LeBlanc, the software engineer that developed the application for us. In my opinion, Mark has done a great job of the app, and I really look forward to enhancing it further together. To actually follow along with some of the screenshots, I'll include them in the M4A or the Enhanced podcast, but they're not in the gallery as you would imagine. I do, though, have them on the app page on my blog, so you can type, it's a bit.ly address, bit.ly/mbpapp, and that'll take you to a page on my blog where you'll see details and some screenshots. But also, like I say, I will embed some into the audio as well. So let me explain what you get for your $4.99. As the name implies, the app is really a companion to the podcast and online community that we have built around the podcast. It helps you to stay in touch with what I'm up to and also links to the community. There are 5 buttons along the bottom of the app when you start it up, and we'll work our way across from left to right. First, we have the podcast player. When you first click this, you'll see a list of all available podcasts to date, and what you can do there, you can select and listen to any of them right there in the application. Because the podcast is in an enhanced podcast, it means that Mark had to jump through a few hoops to be able to play the audio and show you the pictures that we talk about each week as we are, you know, as we're normally playing the enhanced podcast. And it's not possible in third-party apps with the current SDK to play those enhanced podcasts. Though, you know, that may change in the future, but right now it's not possible. I imagine that as most people that own an iPod or an iPhone will already be using iTunes, and you can even download episodes directly to your iPod via iTunes on the phone or your iPod itself. So this player really is like a backup at the moment. Say if you want to listen to a certain podcast from the archives, but you don't have access to your PC to download it and sync it up, the player that we'd used to do that, it's not the best solution, so you really think of it as a backup for now at least. If you do currently subscribe to iTunes though, continue to do that, as I have to admit it's a better solution at the moment, better listening experience. We did try to make sure that you still have the ability to jump through the chapters and see images as we speak, though, and videos will play as well. So I'm relatively happy with the outcome here. Next is the depth of field calculator, and some people have been kind enough to say that it's the best depth of field calculator that they've used on the iPhone. Even though I say it myself, it's the best that I've used too. Unfortunately, I can only take a small amount of credit for this, as Mark did most of this himself. I just gave my feedback on a few changes that I wanted, and Mark came through with those changes as well. When you first start the depth of field calculator, you'll need to select your camera. To do this, just tap on the camera box and select your camera from the list. It's a big list, but Mark devised a unique way where he basically used the first three characters of the camera manufacturer's name along on the right side of the, where you normally have the index menus along the right side there. You'll see lists of three letters, so you'll have CAN for Canon, NIK for Nikon, and so on. So, you know, you can quickly get to your camera model without having to scroll through a lengthy page in the traditional way. To select your camera, you just have to find it in the list and tap it. We intend to keep updating the camera list as new models are released, but in case your camera is not listed for some reason, you can also select the circle of confusion size by selecting COC at the bottom of the screen. To find out what size your camera's circle of confusion is, take a look at the digital COC page on doffmaster.com. I'll put a link to the page, directly to the page in the show notes. Note too that if your camera is not listed on the Doffmaster page either, there's a circle of confusion calculator right there too. If you should buy the app and you find that your camera's not in the list yet, probably not going to happen right now because we think it's pretty comprehensive, but if that should happen at any point, always feel free to mail me and request it to be added and we'll get that in. Once you have your camera selected, you'll want to select the focal length that you'll be shooting at. So say you're shooting using a 70-200 lens at 70mm end, then just tap the focal length box and type in 70 and then hit the check mark at the bottom right to confirm your input. When you want to change the focal length, you just repeat this, but note that you have to use the backspace button to remove the current focal length. We're probably going to change this so that the value is cleared when you open this box again, rather than having to remove it manually. Of course, you can do this in any order, but for this explanation, next, let's set the aperture. Again, by tapping the aperture box this time. And what you want to do is select the aperture that you will set your camera to from the list. And let's say, we're working with the 70-200 2.8, and wide open. So we'll select 2.8 from the aperture size list. And, with that, at 70mm, we're going to have a nice shallow depth of field, so something to look at there. Let's say that we set the distance to subject. That's the next thing that we'll want to do. You'll notice that the boxes that have settable values have light text, and those that are not editable have dark text. The subject distance is set by the middle button of the third line of buttons. If you want to use a different unit to the one selected, I think it's meters is what it's set to by default, but just tap on the units box, second from the bottom on the right, and then tap the subject box. And then you'll just go in there and enter your distance to subjects. And let's just say, in this example, 2 meters. The depth of field will be 0.134 meters. If the depth of field is smaller than you thought, and you can't be bothered to calculate how many centimeters that is, just click the units box again, and this will cycle through the units to centimeters and automatically update the subject distance and the depth of field to display in centimeters. So we can see that we would actually have around 13.4 centimeters of the subject in acceptable sharp focus. If you prefer feet or inches, you can cycle through the units to display in imperial units as well. You'll notice that we also display the near limit and the far limit of the focus either side of the subject distance. And Mark built in a cool little scale using the MBP Kneeling Photographer logo so that you can imagine how the depth of field might look. It doesn't expand or contract with the values, unfortunately, but I think that this is a nice visual aid. Finally, you'll notice that there are two different coloured boxes at the bottom of the depth of field calculator. and these are for hyperfocal distance display. The left box shows you the hyperfocal distance. This is where you would set your focus to achieve hyperfocal distance at the focal length and aperture selected. Of course, with f2.8 at 70mm, it's not going to be enough to achieve pan focus, where everything in the frame is in focus. But this is the sort of information that you would probably be using the depth of field calculator for. We can see that the hyperfocal distance with these settings is actually 57.8 meters. And the box to the right shows us that if we focus at 57.8 meters, everything from 28 meters to infinity, well, 28.9 meters to infinity would be in focus. Another nice touch is if you tap on the hyperfocal distance box, it will repopulate the subject distance with the hyperfocal distance, so you can again visualize your depth of field with the near focus distance to the left, etc. The other use for this, of course, is to find out the aperture that you would require to get closer to pan focus. So you might try setting the aperture to f11, and you'll find that you have everything from 7.25 meters to infinity in focus. And if that meets your needs, if your foreground is not so close, then you can get the capture in your scene. So that's it for the depth of field calculator, but I would also like to say that I really like the idea of being able to actually check depth of field with the calculator during podcasts. And you're going to go into the app along with me, when we're doing podcasts. And I can imagine that in episodes that we're talking about the depth of field, say if you're sitting on a train listening, you'll be able to go right into the calculator and try the settings yourself, which will probably help to drive some of what we're talking about home more easily. Next, we have a Twitter button. And this will display my last 10 tweets on Twitter. If you see a tweet that, say it's got a link that you want to follow, you can click on the timeline button and launch the in-app browser and view the tweets online with active links, etc., so you can follow them. Next along, we have a websites button, and this just links to all of the MBP websites. This is going to be useful if you want to quickly take a look at a forum post, for example, or check the details of any, say, upcoming workshops. There's also a link to the members galleries, so you can check comments on your images that you've uploaded to the members galleries, or take a look at images in the assignment, for example. There's a link to my blog in there too, which automatically formats for the iPhone, unless you turn that feature off. So you can check the transcript of podcasts if my British English was a little bit difficult to understand, or if you would, if you want to check the blog for posts that are not, podcast related. I do on occasion, more recently, I do post some things just to the blog and don't really mention them in the podcast. So it's worth checking that even if you're not using the app. Finally, we have a contact button with an email button, and that will simply launch your phone's email program and put my mail address in the to line. And there's a link to the online contact form as well, which you can fill out and send me email directly from the webpage from a contact form if you'd prefer. Currently, that's all the functionality that we were able to build into the app for the first version. Now, I know that some people are going to think that $4.99 we're charging too much for what's currently really just a great depth of field calculator, and then the rest is really MBP community-related bonus material. I'd like to think that being able to keep in touch and keep everything in one place is a good thing. But I know that some people are not going to agree. If that's how you feel, don't buy it. What I would like to propose, though, is that this is an excellent way for you to pay a little something back for all of the work that I put into the podcast each week. and to help offset the cost of the hosting of the web, you know, the websites and the podcast audio files. I rarely ask for donations as such, although some people are kind enough to send them. But if you buy the app, you actually get something back for your money, and you help with the upkeep of the community at the same time. There's also a bit of a catch-22 situation here as well. If you think that you would like to buy the app, but you want to wait until it has a richer feature set, then please don't wait. All future updates will be totally free, no matter how much we build out the app. But if we don't see enough sales in these early stages, there'll be no incentive for Mark to work on a future version with enhancements. For me either as well, not just down to Mark, but there'll be no real incentive for us to continue to develop this if we don't see any decent sales. So also bear in mind that if we do get enough sales to continue building out the app and it starts to get really good, then we'll probably put the price up. So it will cost you more in the long run anyway. So there's the proposition. If you enjoy the podcast and my almost 5 years of archives and you find the community and the blog useful, then do consider buying the app, if only as a donation. You initially get a nice companion to the podcast and the community, and it's got a great depth of field calculator built in. And you'll also be buying into a great photography learning experience in the future. Before we finish, I'd like to say also thanks to the 5 community members that helped to test the app, and also to mention, thanks to 2 of them having already owning iPads. We were also able to ensure that the app worked great on an iPad as well as iPhones and iPods. So thanks very much to all of your all of the people that helped the test. I really do appreciate that. If you don't have any interest in the iPhone, iPad, or iPods, then sorry for this week's episodes being all about the new app. If you're still listening, of course, which I doubt you will be, I'm excited today too, because I queued for 90 minutes. Not that the queuing wasn't exciting, but I was excited to order my own iPad, which will be with me on or shortly after May 28th, which is the day that they're currently scheduled to be released into the Japan market. So I'm really looking forward to that. Something else that I'm really excited about is that one of my images, along with a few paragraphs of text of an interview with me, is in the June issue of Popular Photography magazine that went on sale last week. You can see a tear sheet on my blog in a post about this. But if you are a subscriber, do check out the how. It's just like a big how on the top of the page with the subtitle Expert Tips and Techniques for Better Photos. So check out that section if you're already subscribed. You can also subscribe or buy individual issues of the magazine via Zinio. This is a digital content site. I subscribe to a large number of magazines via Zinio. Great service. So check that out at zinio.com if you're interested in just taking a look in at that one issue, or subscribing for a year, and it's like, I forget exactly how much, it's like $12, something ridiculously cheap. Also note that I've been playing with the integration of my blog and the new graph paper press theme that I migrated to a few weeks ago to the Photo Shelter account. The integration between the graph paper press themes and Photo Shelter's really turning out to be a lot more than I expected. And over the weekend, I took an hour or so to put together an updated nature and wildlife portfolio. But this time I did it on Photo Shelter, just adding the images that I wanted to include in the portfolio into a new gallery, and then embedded that as a slideshow in my blog, and it takes about 30 seconds. It's literally a number of clicks on Photo Shelter to get the embed code, and then a number of clicks in WordPress on a page that you've created for the slideshow. and you can put it into posts or pages, I believe. I created a page, and it literally takes 30 seconds. And the way these guys have integrated everything really made it very easy. And it's a nice slideshow as well. And I don't mean the images. I'd like to think they're nice, but the look of the slideshow is pretty good. I've put a link to the blog page, to the portfolio in the blog pages pull down that's on the menu at the top of the blog. So take a look if you're interested. I'm still playing with the order of the images. So depending on when you look, the order might not be that great. But if you're interested in seeing how PhotoShelter and GraphPaperPress and WordPress are integrated really well for photographers, then you might want to take a look anyway. So thanks for listening today. And thanks again to our sponsors, WebSpy, for sponsoring the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Remember that you can find me on Flickr and Facebook, as well as Twitter, and of course my blog and the Photography Forum. All links are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so drop by and check that out. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you just have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
This is Dave Warner, and I'm the host of the LensFlare35.com podcast. Each week I bring you interviews with some of the top photographers using digital SLR cameras. They share some of their coolest tips and tricks, techniques, and news about what they're up to. So please take a moment to visit the website or subscribe to LensFlare35 on iTunes.
The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a proud member of the Photocast Network. Find this and other great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.